It started. Welcome to day two of the council meeting. Council members, do you have any desire changes to the agenda this morning? Paul?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to introduce our fourth new hire, Fiona Hogan. Fiona, if you want to stand up, please. Fiona is is currently receiving her PhD from SMAST, so we're delighted that we'll have a doctor on the council staff in biology. She's also had experience on our SCATE PDT, so we're delighted to have Fiona on board, so please welcome her. And for the time being, she's going to replace Annie on ground fishing work with Tom, so I think she should be able to hit the deck running. So anyway, and this is Annie's last council meeting, Annie Hawkins, if you see her. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Paul. We will move right into our first agenda item, which is the protected resources issue. I think we have presentation on that. Good morning, Kim.
Thank you. I'm Kim DeMond-Randall. I'm from the National Marine Fisheries Service's Northeast Regional Office. I know a lot of you have already seen the bulk of this presentation, so I'm going to go through some of the slides pretty quickly just to get to the bulk of the what you're interested in. So I'm going to talk about the Atlantic sturgeon listing. The listing was published in February of this year and became effective on April 6th. We listed five distinct population segments of Atlantic sturgeon, or DPSs. The Gulf of Maine is listed as threatened, and the other four are listed as endangered. And their marine range extends all the way from the Massachusetts-Canada border, Maine-Canada border to Florida. The Gulf of Maine, as I said, was listed as threatened, and the reasons are in this slide. Basically, there are more positive signs for the Gulf of Maine DPS than there are for the other four. The New York Bight and Chesapeake Bay DPSs were listed as endangered. They have a significant risk from bycatch, water quality, vessel strikes, and dredging, and spawning is limited in both DPSs. And the same is true for the Carolina and South Atlantic distinct population segments. Following the listing, we have to designate critical habitat, and that will happen within a year of the final listing, so by February 6, 2013. We have to conduct five-year status reviews for listed species every 5 years, and this is required to ensure accuracy of listing classifications, and we'll be working on recovery planning where we'll have delisting and downlisting criteria identified, as well as recovery actions that should take place to help the species. Following the listing, because we had one DPS that was listed as threatened, we have to promulgate a regulation under Section 4D of the ESA, and that's things that are necessary and advisable for the conservation of the species. We have to issue scientific research permits under Section 10, and we've been coordinating with the councils, the states, and Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, and we'll be conducting Section 7 consultations, which I'll go into in more detail. As I said, we have to promulgate a 4D rule for the threatened DPS. We published a draft 4D rule on June 10th, sought public comment on that, and expect to publish the final 4D rule in June. Under the ESA, you have to have authorization for any take that's going to occur, and that happens through either Section 7 or through Section 10. We also have cooperative agreements with states, and we work through Section 6 on that. And I'll go into more detail on Section 7 since that's where the council is focused. Section 7 of the ESA directs NIMS to ensure that all federal actions are not likely to jeopardize the continued existence of any listed species. A federal action is any discretionary action that is authorized, funded, or carried out by a federal agency. A jeopardy determination, jeopardy is defined as an appreciable reduction in the likelihood of survival and recovery of the species in the wild. For Atlantic sturgeon, because we listed by distinct population segments, each DPS is a unique species. And as I noted, the range in the marine waters, estuarine waters, and even into the rivers of all of the DPSs overlaps. So it makes it more complicated for the Section 7 consultation. We must make a jeopardy determination for each listed species. So for Atlantic sturgeon, it's for each DPS. We've reviewed the existing biological opinions to determine which ones consider actions that may affect Atlantic sturgeon. These include projects that are authorized, funded, or carried out by the Army Corps of Engineers, the National Marine Fisheries Service, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. We may need to reinitiate a few not likely to adversely affect consultations that were done informally for short-nosed sturgeon because there may be incidental take of Atlantic sturgeon that we would need to cover. And we have been providing action agencies with technical assistance considering effects of proposed actions on Atlantic sturgeon. We have over 50 existing biological opinions that were done under formal consultation, and these consider actions that may interact with Atlantic sturgeon. And we've identified approximately 20 high priority opinions that we're working to get completed as soon as possible, and this includes the 11 fishery management plans. The 11 fishery management plans are scallop, multi-species, dogfish, monkfish, skate, squid, mackerel, butterfish, summer flounder, scut, black sea bass, bluefish, lobster, red crab, ocean quahog, and tilefish. We also have consultations that have been reinitiated on the Science Center's trawl surveys, the NEMAP project, the Penobscot River survey was just recently completed for the Science Center, and we have several Army Corps authorized dredging projects that we're working on as well. Additionally, we're likely to reinitiate consultation on NRC authorized nuclear power plant operations, water quality issues that are regulated by the EPA, the Penobscot River Dam Removal Project, U.S. Coast Guard activities, and other bridge and water construction activities. A biological opinion that's done under formal consultation establishes the status of the species, considering what is known about each spawning population and each DPS, and the threats that are faced within and outside the action area of the project. And together, this establishes the baseline of the consultation. The jeopardy analysis examines the future with and without the action under consideration to determine if the proposed action is likely to appreciably reduce the species' likelihood of survival and recovery. And again, that's the definition of jeopardy. In addition to the whale and sea turtle analyses that we'll be doing, we will also determine the effect of the action under consideration as it currently operates or as it's proposed on each DPS of Atlantic sturgeon. We'll establish a number of Atlantic sturgeon that are likely to be captured, injured, or killed by DPS, and we'll determine if that annual loss is likely to appreciably reduce the likelihood of survival and recovery of the species or the DPS. If we conclude that it's not a jeopardy situation, then we provide an incidental take statement, or ITS, that exempts a certain amount of take from the ESA Section 9 prohibitions on take. The level of exempted take is the amount of take we anticipate to result from the proposed action operating as is without any modifications. The ITS includes reasonable and prudent measures, or RPMs, that are non-discretionary and are reasonable and appropriate to minimize and monitor take. We also include terms and conditions which are required, and these serve to implement the RPMs. In most cases, the action taking place with RPMs in place should result in less take than was exempted. We do have for these non-jeopardy situations the minor change rule, which says that RPMs cannot alter the basic design, location, scope, duration, or timing of the action and must involve only minor changes to the action. If we conclude that there's a jeopardy situation, then we must develop at least one reasonable and prudent alternative, or RPA. The RPA modifies the existing operations of the action to reduce the number of mortalities to avoid the likelihood of jeopardy. We can have multiple RPAs that can be chosen from as long as they all meet the relevant conditions. So what we've talked about for the fishery consultations is most likely having a suite of RPAs or RPMs that could be chosen from by the councils based on their feasibility. The RPA can require one minor change in operations or several smaller changes, provided that together the small changes have enough of an impact to remove the jeopardy situation. An RPA is likely to have a time frame associated with it, so it might say something like must modify operations to reduce bycatch by a certain percent in a certain number of years. So since Atlantic sturgeon are a long-lived species, we anticipate that there will be time to implement any RPA. And we're working on the consultation now to determine what that time period would be. Any RPA must meet several conditions. It can be implemented in a manner that's consistent with the intended purpose of the action. It can be implemented consistent with the scope of the federal agency's legal authority and jurisdiction. It's economically and technologically feasible, and it removes the jeopardy situation. Once an RPA is developed, the implementation of the RPA is mandatory. We can have a phased-in approach to implementation, provided we can justify that any delay in implementation is not likely to jeopardize the species. We have to have an analysis that demonstrates that the action carried out pursuant to that RPA will result in mortalities at a low enough rate so that the action is not likely to jeopardize any listed species. And in this case, we're talking about Atlantic sturgeon, so any DPS of Atlantic sturgeon. At that point, once you've removed the jeopardy situation, you can have an incidental take statement that is provided for that modified action. The ITS provides, again, a take exemption, and that's the number of Atlantic sturgeon likely to be killed, captured, or injured in the modified action, and it has those non-discretionary RPMs and terms and conditions. Depicted here is a map of Atlantic sturgeon from several different data sources. You can see that they pretty much cover the entire area that the New England Council covers and the Mid-Atlantic Council covers. We have some information on the genetic composition of the five DPSs and also fish from Canada. This is done by a couple of geneticists, one from New York University and one from the Leetown lab of the USGS. They looked at observer samples, and they were able to assign those observer samples back to the DPS of origin, and for some cases back to the river of origin if there's multiple spawning rivers within a DPS. We looked at the observer program data to see how the Atlantic sturgeon that were identified as captured in the observer program fall out. And as you can see from this slide, in gill nets with the trip target identified, monkfish had the highest percentage. This includes a large percentage of other, and other are actually fish species that are caught in state waters or in state fisheries. This is trip target without other included, and as you can see, monkfish increases significantly. And then this is a depiction of the gill net with the other separated out. And croaker and striped bass and weakfish are large percentages. This is the same thing, trip target for trawl fisheries. And summer flounder, scut black sea bass is the largest percentage. This is without other, again. And then this is the other category, with croaker being the most significant percentage in blue. I know it's hard to see those numbers, but you should be able to see it on your handouts. So we asked the Northeast Fisheries Science Center to look at the observer data from 2006 to 2010 to provide an estimate of discards of Atlantic sturgeon. They focused on otter trawl and sink gillnet gear because those are the gear types that are most commonly associated with Atlantic sturgeon interactions. Their report only presents information for the Northeast fisheries. They used two methods that are presented in their report, the design-based and model-based estimators. The design-based estimator expands the ratio of total sturgeon takes to total landings by the total landings within a cell, and the model-based estimator incorporates the mixture of species associated with the observed trips, and the Science Center felt that that provided more rigorous results. The bycatch report, the Science Center considers the use of the model-based approach more appropriate. They did note that allocating takes to FMP is difficult based on the available information. The model-based approach is able to allocate the takes to otter trawl and sink gillnet gear. Using that information, on average, between the time period we're talking about, 2006 to 2010, 3,118 Atlantic sturgeon are estimated to be captured in Northeast FMP fisheries each year in sink gillnet and otter trawl gear. Otter trawl and sink gillnet, there were for those two types, no landings were attributed to Atlantic herring, river herring, salmon, tilefish, red crab, or surf clams or ocean quahog when sturgeon were taken. So we're going to be able to separate those out of the consultation and complete those consultations really quickly. The mortality rate that was estimated in otter trawls is approximately 5%, and in sink gillnet gear it's approximately 20%. Except for when gillnets were had the primary haul target of monkfish, where the mortality rate was slightly higher at 27%. And all of these mortality rates are based on the observer categorizing the take as either alive or dead with no adjustment for post-release mortality. For the otter trawl gear in that time period, 2006 to 2010, the average estimate is 1,548 annual encounters. This is encounters, not mortalities. Approximately 77 mortalities are estimated to occur per year based on that 5% mortality rate. For St. Gilnet, the annual average of encounters is 1,597, with an annual mortality rate estimated at 320 per year, based on the 20% mortality rate. These estimates include trips where no FMP species were landed. Approximately 13% of otter trawl estimate and approximately 22% of the St. Gilnet estimate is attributed to non-FMP fisheries. So in order to do the consultations, we have to be able to figure out what numbers we have for each population. And we only have two population estimates for Atlantic sturgeon, one for the number of mature adults in the Hudson and one for the number of spawning adults per year in the Altamaha. So based on what we know about the estimate for the Hudson River, we were able to calculate an intercept rate based on that number of 3,118 encounters per year. That gave us an intercept rate of 38%. Using that, we were able to do some math to figure out if you assume the intercept rate is the same for all of the DPSs, we were able to back calculate estimates for each of the DPSs. And this is a combined estimate for the New York Bight and Delaware because we have two spawning populations in that DPS. So these are, it's a little easier to read on this slide. These are the estimates. So we have a number of adults, and that's the first column. Then we have an estimated number of subadults, which are at a size that's vulnerable to the fishery. When you add those together, that gives us a combined estimate of adults and subadults at a size that are vulnerable to the fishery for each DPS. All of the New England Council and Mid-Atlantic Council FMPs are considered in the existing ESA consultations. Any consultation that considers an action that may affect any DPS of Atlantic sturgeon must be reinitiated to consider the effects of these newly listed species. These opinions will also update, as I said earlier, the analysis for whales and sea turtles as appropriate. We've decided, based on our discussions with the council and the various coordination meetings that we've had, that it's best to do a batch consultation for the bluefish, multi-species, monkfish, skate, spiny dogfish, squid mackerel butterfish, and summer flounder scut black sea bass FMPs. And that's because it's so difficult to attribute the Atlantic sturgeon takes back to the original fishery. We're doing separate consultations for the scallop, lobster, red crab, surf clam, ocean quahog, tilefish, and Atlantic herring. And again, the last five of those don't have Atlantic sturgeon interactions, so they'll be completed very quickly. And this is just a table of when the consultation was most recently completed and then which ones have interactions with Atlantic sturgeon, which I've already mentioned. So our timeline for the scallop consultation is to complete that by June 1st. For the lobster consultation, we intend to complete that by the reinitiation date of June 20th. And for the batch consultation, because this is a pretty significant change in how we normally do our consultations, which are normally done on an FMP by FMP basis, we need a little bit more time to complete that. And we expect to complete that this summer, hopefully in August, and that's our target date. These consultations, particularly the batch consultations, will provide possible measures to consider to reduce the Atlantic sturgeon interactions or mortalities. Based on conversations we've had with councils and various committees, these are some of the possible measures that might be included, and we welcome any feedback on these measures. And I'm not going to go through the last two slides because I figure there's probably more questions than those slides will help.
Thank you, Kim. Council members, questions? David Pierce.
Good morning. I'm trying to reconcile the table that you showed providing the mature adult population estimate versus the last slide that you didn't show because it's got so much information in it, but it is provided in the document, the handout, where you show stock assessment versus status review listing determination. Now, I don't recall the 1998 stock assessment. That's the last assessment that was done, right, 1998. But now we have some additional stock assessment information, I believe, that is derived solely from the unpublished NIMS estimates determined for the purposes of conducting Section 7 consultations, and that's the asterisk that explains that data in the table that you provided. So I guess as I talk, I'm answering my own question. In 1998, that's when the last assessment was done. No new assessment has been done since then. So now we are relying totally, the service is relying totally on this procedure that's described in that figure. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. It says unpublished NIMS estimates. Are those estimates, are those data available for all to see? I assume it must be somewhere that we can access, right?
They'll be in the biological opinion when it's completed. They're not anywhere right now because we're working on some white papers to write up how we did the methodology, and the white paper for this methodology is not quite final yet. But it will be posted. We'll be able to post it as soon as it is.
Okay, so as it stands right now, the service is assuming that we only have in the Gulf of Maine 166 adults, and we have 498 sub-adults. And they're all, that is the adults as well as the sub-adults, are vulnerable to fisheries. So as you move forward with your various opinions, I assume you'll be developing and recommending management strategies for implementation that will relate to protection of 664 sturgeon in the Gulf of Maine. Am I correct?
Those are the ones that are vulnerable to the fisheries, yes. But then you have the smaller size classes that aren't yet vulnerable to the fishery.
I guess I'm confused because it says estimated number of sub-adults. So are there any more sturgeon that the service is concerned about beyond the 498 sub-adults? You've got your 166 adults, 498 sub-adults. So what else? What else is there?
There's young of the year and small sub-adults.
Young of the year and small sub-adults. Okay. All right. Well, I look forward to getting that information as soon as possible regarding what the status of the stock is. And, of course, the procedure that was used to come up with those numbers, which apparently was based on some mixed stock analysis. So I'm uncomfortable right now with what I have before me and what the service is doing, primarily because I have no information regarding the status of the stocks as assessed by the service through this method. So I guess we have to wait for that information to be provided. And that will be provided when?
We're in the process of finalizing the white paper now. It should be done within the next 2 weeks.
Good, thank you.
Laura.
Hi. I might not be reading this correctly, but I just was looking at the bycatch estimates page, and it seems to say that on average we interacted with 3,118 Atlantic sturgeon. But when we interacted, 95% of them that were caught in an otter trawl survived, and 80% in a St. Gillnet survived. So I'm wondering, we're seeming that we're going to tie up a lot of resources on behalf of and cause a lot of angst in the industry based on the fact that 5% are experiencing mortality, or 20% in the gillnet example. I'm not sure that's justified.
In the listing determination, we determined that bycatch is threatening the continued existence of the species, and it's bycatch in both federal fisheries and state fisheries. So we're going to be addressing it in federal fisheries through the Section 7 process, and in state fisheries most likely through the Section 10 process. And combined, it's a significant threat to the species, so we do have to address it, even though the mortality rates might seem low.
Again, though, it's significant. I mean, 95% of them are surviving. I'm not sure how that's significant.
Yeah, there's definitely a lower mortality rate in otter trawls, so it's less of a concern, and a higher mortality rate in St. Gillnets, and that's really where our focus probably will be on, is trying to address the St. Gillnet mortality since it's higher and reducing that number. We're talking about very low population sizes, so even a small percentage being removed each year is a significant number of Atlantic sturgeon.
Laura.
Except that we have no idea what the population really is because we haven't looked at it since 1998.
We have the two population estimates, and those are considered to be the strongest populations, and they're very, very low.
Dave Gason.
Thank you. This is the second time I've seen you at Groundfish, so I've had a little time to think about what you presented the first time. Based on the last slide, stock assessment versus status review listing determination, my question pretty simply is, wouldn't it be reasonable and prudent to conduct a new stock assessment. The information is from 1998. Most of its assumptions based on that and the status review. I know there's been a lot of research done on sturgeon. I read about it in the trade papers over the last 10 years. So there must be a lot more information out there now. Wouldn't that seem to be the easiest thing to do here first, is let's see if they're still endangered? That's my first question.
So we were petitioned, I kind of skipped over that to get to the meat of the presentation, but we were petitioned to list the species by NRDC, and that set us on a clock that we had to complete the consultation or the listing determination within a year of getting that petition. And under the ESA, you have to use the best available information. So we did conduct a status review in 2007, and this slide that's up there now, it's pretty wordy, but I was trying to show the difference between a stock assessment and a status review and some of the information that you would have in each document. And the status review is based on all of the available information. So all of that research that you're talking about is considered in the status review, just like it would be in a stock assessment. So that information has been considered and incorporated into the listing decision. And for stock assessments, the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission has the lead role for that. If they were to initiate a stock assessment, they could do that. It's up to them.
Excuse me. We're still being driven by the fact that somebody came in here and you only had a year to say yay or nay, right? That's the basic problem here. It's not whether we're doing the right thing or the best thing or anything like that. We're being driven by, you know, regulatory requirements of having an answer in a year is basically what you're saying.
We had a little bit longer than a year because we did start the status review in 2006. So we did look at all the information that was available then. We finished it in 2007, and then we were still collecting information after that to work on any type of rule or listing decision. Then we were petitioned, and that set us on that clock where we couldn't do any more collection of information. We had to look at what was available to us at that time. We do have the five-year status review requirement. So every 5 years, we have to review any new information that's come out. So we'll have to do a new status review in 2017. So if a stock assessment was done in between now and then, that information would be considered in that five-year status review as well.
Okay, let me ask you another question. How about if somebody petitions you to delist something?
It would be the same process as listing. So you would have to petition us to delist. We would have to review that information and whether or not that information indicated that that petitioned action was warranted. If it was, then we would go through the same process of determining whether or not the delisting petition was warranted over that course of that year if we had a positive 90-day finding on it.
Okay, thank you. And then I'm going to call your attention to the slide. It's number 19 on the handout we have. It says if we conclude jeopardy. And down at the bottom, the second to last bullet says economically and technologically feasible. And I'd like a little bit more information on that. I'll give you an example. Let's say it's technologically feasible to outlaw gill netting. That's technologically feasible, but it's economically an absolute non-starter for the gill net fishery because they're out of business. So how, you know, what are the definitions of these words and what are the trade-offs that are allowed?
They're not really defined in the ESA, but basically what I mentioned before is what we intend to do is offer a suite of possible measures, which were on the slide before. So you could look at these and determine which ones are feasible and economically probable or practicable, and those are things that you could choose from. This isn't necessarily the end list. It's just ideas to get other ideas and feedback from staff and council members. But if there's something on here that you didn't think was economically and technologically feasible, then that would be one measure that you wouldn't consider and wouldn't implement as part of that suite of RPA measures.
Okay, so as the council, and we have to, you know, our staff and our committees are going to have to, you know, make this determination. If we submit something, and in our eyes it's economically and technologically feasible, because there's no real definitions here, who ultimately determines whether beauty is in the eye of the beholder?
Well, if it's already in the biological opinion, then we would have agreed that it was economically and technologically feasible. If it's a new measure that the council develops, then we would have to have some proof that it was something that was able to be implemented from you. You would have to provide us with that proof that you could do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else in the council? Sally.
Thank you. You mentioned briefly today and in a previous presentation that you gave to the Groundfish Committee a couple months ago, other federally permitted activities that might need to have further review due to the listing of Atlantic sturgeon. Specifically, I have a question related to projects like the Penobscot River Dam Removal Project. And obviously, that project is designed to help sturgeon and other diatomaceous species, among other things. So can you talk about that at all? I know that the focus here was on the fishery management plans, but certainly activities like that are important in thinking about how the species might be coming back, removing dams like the Penobscot project. But at the same time, it has to be looked at in terms of the impact on the species in the removal before you get, to the upswing of the project.
So we are actually in the process of reinitiating that consultation. We've completed it for salmon and short-nosed sturgeon that are in the river, and we now need to look at it and determine what the impacts or potential impacts may be to Atlantic sturgeon. It does restore access to probably 100% of their historical spawning habitat, so that's obviously a very good thing. But we will be completing consultation on that relatively soon and looking at what that does to the species. And all of that information goes into the environmental baseline. So when you're looking at another action, things that are like that project that have a benefit to Atlantic sturgeon are incorporated into the environmental baseline for the other consultations.
I have Laura, then Tom, then Doug.
Just one other quick question. As you are looking at the impacts on the species, is it only fishing and projects like Sally said, damming, that type of thing that you're considering in terms of the impact on the sturgeon, or are you looking at things like predation?
We're looking at other things as well. So we looked at predation in the listing determination. And predation is not a significant factor for this species or hasn't been proven to be a significant factor for the species. But there are other things like vessel strikes, water quality, all of those things. If there's a federal nexus, we'll be conducting Section 7 consultations on those as well.
Tom.
Great. Thanks. Recently, we read that the Stellar Sea Lions had achieved their recovery target and had been removed from the endangered species list. When do you see us getting an actual specific recovery target for sturgeon, and what will be the process by which that number and the process for deriving that number is peer-reviewed and public?
So we have to initiate recovery planning. We're actually in the process of doing that now. We'll form a recovery team, and that's a very broad team with anyone that has expertise on Atlantic sturgeon, and that's the group that works on developing delisting and downlisting criteria. So those numbers, if they can be developed, will be developed and incorporated into the recovery plan. That's typically a more lengthy process because you try to be as inclusive as possible. So usually it takes about 18 months to develop the draft recovery plan and about 2.5 years to finalize that recovery plan. Sometimes it's longer than that because we do want to be as inclusive as possible.
Just a quick follow-up. You mentioned that you used the word if those recovery targets could be developed. Is there a scenario in which we would pursue this with no recovery target for an extended period of time? I mean, is there a situation where a recovery target is not specifically defined?
There's a possibility that it might not be a number. It might be a more qualitative estimate of what recovery would look like. I'm guessing we could probably develop a model that would give us a number, but because we're pretty data limited, it might be hard to come up with an exact number for each DPS. But it's something that we'd be working towards.
Doug Grout. Yeah, I just need to get some clarification of the council's process in this consultation. Once you come up with the biological opinions, you will come up with potentially a suite of measures in consultation with the council that could be used to reduce the takes that are occurring. And would you want those implemented in our fisheries management plans, or are they things that NIMS will implement on their own?
Ideally, they would be things that are implemented in the fishery management plans.
David Pierce.
I notice in your list of possible measures to consider to reduce interactions with mortality is a very important bullet that I call to your attention, since I'm uncertain as to what extent the service has factored in, at least with groundfish, let's say in the Gulf of Maine, to what extent you factored in what we have done through Amendment 16 to the groundfish plan, and that is we now have sector management. So it's a new way of doing business. It's resulted in changes in effort distribution, and I think importantly, if what I suspect is true, and I'll reference the bullet now, possible measure to reduce the interaction of mortalities, increase the efficiency with which fisheries target species, for example, increase landings per unit effort. I suggest that as you move forward, you give serious consideration to the fact that through sector management, we may actually have done that, increased efficiency with which the fisheries are targeted. So now we have increased landings per unit effort, and that may be a major selling point for there not having to be any significant, maybe any at all, measures that would deal with sturgeon take as bycatch in the groundfish fisheries. No analysis has been done, of course, but you have the bullet there. So I'm hopeful that, again, that's given serious consideration, since much of the work that I think you've done and the data on which you have relied doesn't necessarily factor in this way of this way of managing groundfish and how the fishery has changed.
We do in the biological opinion have a section on it describes the fishery, so all of that information on the changes in the fishery would be described in the biop.
If I could jump in here, I wanted to go back to Sally's question concerning the dam removal issue, whether it's in the Penobscot or anywhere else. It certainly seems as though access to traditional spawning grounds is an impediment to the recovery of the species. Is there, within the Endangered Species Act, is there, in fact, a way to help with dam removal because of the fact that they are such an impediment to the recovery of the species? I assume when you look at, in the case of the Penobscot, you'd have to look at some negative impact during the process of removal and then the overall benefit of opening up the river. But, they're on an ongoing basis, there's certainly a lot of impediments in general to removing dams, and I didn't know whether this, in fact, could help open up some more spawning habitat for them.
Sure. We formed within the Northeast Regional Office a sturgeon task force, and the Habitat Restoration Center is part of that task force, and they're typically our group that works on those types of dam removal or restoration projects, rock ramps and other types of restoration efforts to restore access to areas. So they're on our task force, and hopefully if they have funds and they're trying to come up with priorities, any river systems that have Atlantic sturgeon spawning populations or most likely have Atlantic sturgeon spawning populations would be considered a high priority when they're making their funding decisions.
Anyone else? Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question relates, I guess, to the last slide where you have a comparative anatomy of the stock assessment and the status review. If you read down through the stock assessment, you'll come to understand it was fairly inadequate. There was a lot of missing information, but the one piece of information that was probably useful there is the computation of the fishing mortality rate at the top of the first list there, because that drives off of some pretty simple models, eel per recruit and egg per recruit, and an understanding of life history. And to me, that's the crippling element of this, is that is so low for a recovered stock. If you just hypothesize that a rebuilding stock might need an F half that size, that gets to Laura's question as to why this is so difficult. Even if only a few die, you're going to be challenging the mortality rate that's required for rebuilding. So my question is, It says in the other, on the companion list of the status review, that there was updates to life history information. Do you know if those reference points were recomputed during the status review? And was there any change in life history understanding that would have elevated those more F50s for a recovered stock and presumably a lower one for a recovering or a stock that's not rebuilt?
They were not recomputed for the status review. The ASMSC implemented a fishing moratorium in 1998, and we followed that up with a federal moratorium in 1999. So directed fishing has been prohibited since that time.
I'm aware of that. That's not really the question. The computation of the mortality rate over there, I think, derives off of, again, egg per recruit and yield per recruit models, which is simply a matter of putting in how long an animal lives, how fast it grows, and so on. And these are unusual animals. I don't know how many have ever seen one, but a full-size one, I think some people would be astounded by its size and its antiquity. But that was my question, whether those reference points have been recomputed based on any life history, understanding of life history. And that being the case, that I think puts everybody, including the states, in a very small box relative to what allowable mortality.
Anyone else on the council? David?
I'd like to make a motion, Mr. Chairman, if it's appropriate at this time. I need to be guided by you relative to how this discussion is going to be proceeding. It's a motion that I would make that actually, I think, would help the regional office. Specifically, in the last slide, it says the regional office has a sturgeon task force, and your goal is to provide a mechanism for full and open communication on sturgeon-related issues within the region. This listing in the New England area and the Mid-Atlantic area obviously has tremendous implications. It's going to cause frankly, untold grief for the fishermen as they struggle to deal with what I think will be an eventual jeopardy decision, and that's the take I get from reading the Federal Register announcement on the listings. The councils have been now drawn into the Atlantic sturgeon management arena. Yes, it is a species that is managed by ASMFC, but now this council and the Mid-Atlantic Council are in the arena. So I'm going to make a motion. It's a little long. It's not going to do my reputation as making long motions any good. But anyways, I'm going to make it. All right. I would move that the council send a letter to the National Marine Fisheries Service requesting a joint meeting of the agency's protected species staff and the New England Fishery Management Council, Mid-Atlantic Fishery Management Council, Scientific and Statistical Committees, to receive a detailed update from NIMS staff on the Atlantic sturgeon listing under the Endangered Species Act. Following this meeting, the SSC will review scientific basis for the listing with a focus on the methodology and data used to generate the listing and associated conclusions and methodology used to generate bycatch and discard estimates by gear type, season, and area. Then, after this review, the SSC will advise the councils as to the appropriateness of the methodology used in the NIMS analysis and recommend ways to improve the analysis and how the analysis can be used to reduce sturgeon bycatch. And then the council would request the NIMS protected species staff provide both councils, New England and Mid-Atlantic, with a detailed description of the methodology, the process, the timeline, and description of any public process mechanisms NIMS will use to formulate the so-called batch biological opinion specific to Atlantic sturgeon. We'll provide a detailed explanation of the baseline population data being used to estimate the condition of each DPS, the rationale that will be used to determine whether jeopardy exists for each affected fishery, and how the incidental take statements will be calculated in relation to the DPS population condition for each affected fishery, and a draft biological opinion on sturgeon, following the precedent set with the Pacific Councils with a potential ESA listing involving the North Pacific groundfish and Hawaiian swordfish fisheries, and the time period allowing for adequate review of and public comment on this biological opinion. So it's a long motion. It's very detailed, but it describes the process that I suggest this council and even the Mid-Atlantic Council should follow to get us deeper into this discussion so that we can actually make enlightened decisions as time unfolds. So that is my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we will need a second, but I don't think it hurts your reputation. I think it enhances your reputation. I see Terry Stockwell seconding. Were you seconding it?
I will if I can comment.
Okay.
I mean, my understanding is that without the inclusion of the SSC, this is essentially what the agency is doing right now. I'd also feel that, you know, should this move ahead, that it's absolutely paramount that the ASMSC Sturgeon TC be involved in there as a lead in the management. The expertise that's involved would be critical to help. But this is the fifth time I've seen this presentation. Am I incorrect that this is what you're in fact doing?
No, I think you're right.
Sally.
What Terry just said, what I heard in the responses, especially to the questions, is that this is what is going to be happening over the course of the next several weeks and months. And, you know, while something that has potentially this major an impact on most of the fisheries in the Northeast, I think we need to be patient to some degree and make sure that the service knows that we want to know what's going on every step of the way so that we can understand what the best response is going to be once they've finished their analysis. I don't think it makes sense to double task the SSC to be looking at this, especially when it's the analysis that the agency is doing is incomplete. So for that reason, not because I don't think this should happen, I think it is happening. I think that we need to look to NIMS to finish their job and to do all of these things. But I think that it would put an undue burden on the SSC.
Dave Kasel, did you had your hand up with a comment? Okay. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I agree completely with the intent of this motion. My only problem, but I can't support it at this time, my problem with it is that it is, in fact, premature. We haven't seen the biops yet. And secondly, while I endorse completely what Dr. Pierce is trying to do here, he's also writing in a full set of terms of reference for the SSC, and that's really the job of the executive committee to do. So I think that while he has enhanced his reputation, certainly, I think it's been enhanced a bit too much here. I would prefer to see this done after we get the biops, and I think we need to work over the motion in order to get to that point, and then leave the executive committee to do the TORs. But I very much endorse the idea of what he's doing here.
Laura Ramson.
David, we were wondering if you got paid by the word, by the state. No, seriously, my question maybe is for Terry. I'm not sure who the proper person is, but instead of tasking the SSC, and I would agree with Sally and Dave's comments, my biggest problem with this is that we don't really know how many sturgeon there are. And would it be appropriate for us as a council to write a letter to ask the ASMC, whatever the acronym is, to conduct the stock assessment?
Terry.
The ASMSC is, in fact, meeting next week, and Sturgeon is going to be one of the front burner discussions. So, we've had parallel conversations and quite an explosive meeting at our winter meeting when this was my first presentation. And, essentially a number of the same questions asked. So, I support the intent. I think that, as I said, the timing's a little awkward, and I think it really has to be a three-way or four-way partnership between both councils, the commission, and the service to move this ahead. But good questions are being asked, and the impacts are huge.
Just a comment. really on the same topic. I think the idea that we need to understand what the biops are is certainly very important. I think people also have to be cognizant of the fact that we've already tasked the SSC with a number of items that are on their schedule. And so thinking ahead, I mean, it's not going to be immediately in the future for the SSC to be have the time to tackle this. So, again, I don't know that there's that immediacy that we need to act on this right at this time. David.
Yeah, I appreciate your points, Mr. Chairman. Certainly, the SSC has a lot on its plate. Yesterday's initiative put something else on their plate. But frankly, I'm continuously frustrated by the demands put on this council to deal with issues that are put on our plate, sturgeon being one gigantic turkey on the plate. And it's going to be awful hard to deal with that. And we need the SSC contribution, which, of course, is why I made the motion, especially as it relates to the biological information, the modeling that is used, the assessment procedure, which, frankly, is pretty sketchy. And, yes, it'll be made available to us fairly soon in a white paper, but I'm very uncomfortable with what we have before us now. And, frankly, I'm pretty much of a mind, and I could be wrong, that we are going to find out, once the biological opinion is offered up, that there is jeopardy. I don't see how that can't be concluded based upon what I have read in the Federal Register announcement regarding the listings and what I have seen in this document, this handout. So maybe I'm premature, but I don't think I am. I would prefer to act on this now through this motion as opposed to waiting for events to unfold and more time goes by and we find ourselves with far less time than we need in order to respond in an appropriate way to what the service will say we must do.
Thank you. I'm going to go to Paul Howard, then I will go to the audience for their comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if I understand right, Kim, the data that was used to determine the status of sturgeon was peer-reviewed by an outside source, and it's now listed. I don't understand if the SSC reviews it and says, well, you missed a few things. That doesn't change the listing. You've already had it peer-reviewed. You've already looked at the science. So, again, my caution to the council is we seem to be using the SSC to, continually double-check NIMS work. And I think eventually they're going to get pretty upset doing that because there's other things on their plate that we ask them to do. So I think there's a policy that I don't know if the motion of having the SSC review it is going to do anything at all.
Okay, I'm going to go to the public. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to comment? Ron?
Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. We don't take sturgeon in the scallop dredge fishery, but our concern is the concept of critical habitat. So I know that isn't being discussed right now, but I understand in this motion Dave's concern about transparency and oversight. I mean, I first met Terry Stockwell when he was a gillnetter a long time ago, and we were dealing with a harbor porpoise issue where we had an annual take of 2,000 and a population estimate of 3,000. It took a lot of effort to get NIMS, not the protected species people in NIMS, but the assessment people in NIMS, to start looking and doing surveys for harbor porpoise, because that was the crux of the matter. The harbor porpoise were there, that's why they were being taken, and now the population estimates were up around 100,000. We went from 3,000 to 15,000 to 40,000. To 100,000. We have to deal with this, and it's not just a simple issue of reducing takes and fisheries. The issue is critical habitat. And we're talking about an animal with the assessment level we're talking about now, as Mark pointed out, it's going to be, if there was a PBR under ESA, it would be zero. Okay, zero. And when you start looking at critical habitat, they put out, you know, they destroyed, you know, tens of billions of dollars of a lumber industry in Oregon, you know, over the spotted owl. They could wipe out the entire fisheries of the east coast of the United States with critical habitat concerns. So you can't, this is not a light issue. Okay, this is really a heavy issue, and every effort has to be put into figuring out what the population is and what is the real threats to the population. And it's going to require an organization like the Science Center to go and start working full bore on this. You take something as simple as this intercept concept. I mean, that's what we're dealing with, this intercept concept, which is what saying that of the population of vulnerable sturgeon, 38% of them every year encounter fishing gear. And then we work backwards from that number. I mean, it's basically a catch-and-release fishery. You know, how many of those fish re-encounter? I mean, you could go and say that their population estimate is actually a fraction of what they're projecting because it's the same fish encountering the gear every year. There's real problems here. So while I agree with the concept, but I think this has to be sort of an offline discussion among the leadership about how to really start getting a population assessment and forgetting that, oh, it's an ASFFC or it's Northeast Council or Mid-Atlantic Council. I mean, really need to go full tilt in understanding the population and the real threat here.
Anyone else? Greg.
Greg DiDomenico, Garden State Seafood Association. Not only do I support the intent of this motion, but I support the implementation of this motion, and let me explain why. While we realize that the issue of whether certain DPSs are threatened or endangered or not are not exactly on the table at this point, what we do understand, though, is that a thorough review by the technical committee that the commission and both Mid-Atlantic and New England SSCs will further give you the specificity that you need, that the councils will need to address the impacts on these fisheries and the fisheries impacts on sturgeons. Let me just say that what is still debated and what will still be analyzed, and the accuracy of which is very important, is the determination of jeopardy for these species. Will it be by fishery? Will it be by FMP? Will it be by, and will it change between regulatory councils? You've got Mid-Atlantic Council fisheries that are jointly managed with the lead being the Mid-Atlantic and then the lead being New England, but they're jointly managed. You've got fisheries that are managed by HMS, by the commission. So there is a real serious issue of regulatory authority here, and the accuracy of the data is absolutely important. That's why the implementation of this is so important, so paramount. Also, the SSC will be able to give you further analyze the setting of individual take levels by fishery. That is still up for debate. It's going to be different between fisheries. It's going to be different between regions. It's going to be different between regulatory bodies. I see the SSC as giving you a better idea, and the technical committee of the commission, giving you a better idea of what is currently being assessed by the agency. Now, Dave's issue of the draft biological opinion is most important. The councils can wait for a white paper that may come too late, and you will not have any available time to make changes to it as it goes through the process and as the biological opinion becomes final. Wouldn't the council rather have a draft biological opinion that they can make comments on instead of a final that will only give you RPAs and RPMs? That's the critical point here. That can happen. There's precedent setting in those two fisheries that were listed from the North Pacific and from the Hawaiian Council, the Pacific Council. They were given draft biological opinions, whereby which the councils and the other expertise in those individual councils were given the opportunity to make comment on the analyses that determines jeopardy, that determines RPAs, that determines RPMs.
That's what's most important here. I can't speak enough to the issue of implementing this and giving it its proper attention. And it'll make your job easier and make us a much easier way to reduce interactions. Thank you.
Anyone else? In the back, come on.
Good morning. Attorney John Whiteside, representing the American Scallop Association. I also am here to support the motion by Dr. Pierce and echo the comments of the prior two speakers that we believe that the more information that we can get as rapid as possible that can be accurate and support one position or another, so that we have a clear understanding of what's going to happen, we would support that, and we believe that this motion will achieve that end. Thank you.
Anyone else? Ellen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to speak in support of Dr. Pierce's motion, because I really think that I'm always in favor of keeping the federal government's nose to the fire, and the more information that the council has, the more ability you will have and more flexibility in the final product to be proactive. Having said that, I had a comment on the report, and I had a question. And under the bycatch report, NEFSC bycatch report, 5 bullets down, it says that design-based estimator expands the ratio of total sturgeon takes to total landings by the total landings within a cell. And my question is, was this data used, it says from 2006 to 2010, was it to the beginning of the year 2010 or through December 2010?
I believe it was through December 2010, but Paul Rego.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Knowing that, then we have only, at that point, did you have the final numbers for that the catch shares were in existence for half a year, 6 months? 6 months. Did you have those numbers included? Were they the final numbers? Okay, you only have a half a year in that whole data set of the new catch share system, which has totally changed the catch per unit effort per, I'll take the gillnet fishery in particular, the number of landings per net rather than the total number of landings. So you have a higher landing. It would be much more appropriate to be looking not at total landings, because total landings have increased, but to the number of nets used. And I think that this is a really important point, and I think that the methodology should be questioned highly. Thank you.
Anyone else? Okay, I'll come back to the council. Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thanks to Kim for the presentation and to everyone for their comments. As Kim noted, the white papers on the methodology can be made available, and we can do that as soon as they are cleared in-house. We can also share the draft biological opinion. I do not think it's appropriate for the SSC to get this upfront review of this process. As you know, Paul and others who are more familiar with the burdens on the SSC have stated, I don't think I need to revisit that. I would hope that the council would entertain a motion that would, rather than subject let me pause for a moment. Rather than in addition to taking a good look at the science. We really want to ensure that we have council input on measures that would address the interactions, and whether to minimize them or to decrease the chances that they're lethal. And it seems that that discussion may need to follow the path that the Mid-Atlantic has taken, which is to form a committee for sturgeon and even an FMAT, an advisory panel, so that we get industry input on specific measures that can mitigate the interactions with sturgeon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have Tom Dempsey, then Doug Grout, and Glenn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I definitely agree with the need to get that draft biological opinion and agree with some of the comments made at the table and from the audience that's a key aspect of a transparent public process where everyone from the industry to the various councils and the commission can be better informed and make plans as to how they will ultimately respond to the final version of that and have input on that. So that was going to be my question, is whether we needed a formal motion to request that or get a commitment for that. But based on Dan's comments, it seems that the service is committed to providing that draft report, that we'll have that as soon as possible. And that's, I think, what that's the major outcome, in my eyes, the productive outcome of this kind of motion. So if we already have that commitment, I'm comfortable moving forward with that, and we can respond after we receive it.
Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Something struck me in the discussion here, and I was reminded that this had been peer-reviewed. And first of all, the question is, the peer review scientists were from where?
Most of them were from academia. We had, while we were working on the status review, we had regional and state biologists contribute information for their states that were incorporated into the status review. So we incorporated state input that way. And then most of the peer reviewers were from academia. And there's a list of them on our website, as well as their reviews.
But the thing that sort of struck me is you stated that there's a white paper describing the methodology that has not been publicly distributed yet. Clearly, the peer review must have had access to the methodology to determine whether the methodology was appropriate. So they had no access to the methods. Am I missing something as to what we're talking about with methods?
The peer review was of the status review report. The white paper that we're producing is laying out how we're doing the Jeopardy analysis and how we got to those numbers that I presented today.
Brian Libby.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just listened to the conversation. I know that 20, 30 years ago, there were a lot more fishermen out there. The rivers were less clean. I don't know if there's any data on sturgeon take back then, but it seems like there should have been more, or maybe there was just less sturgeon. If there were less sturgeon, maybe there's more now. But anyway, it just seems incredible that we're going through this now when there's hardly any fishermen left, and the rivers are a lot cleaner than they were back in the past, where, conditions should be right for having them recover and not have sort of a crisis going on here. So I'm inclined to support this. I think we need all the information that we can get. Maybe somebody will turn over a rock that somebody's missed. I don't know if that's possible, but, it just, with everything else going on, the timing is a little scary. Thank you.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. While we continue to overtask the SSC, we're overtasked with everything we do. And this motion absolutely highlights the significant impacts of this listing on all the fisheries that we manage. So I'm in support of the motion, but I would request Dr. Pierce to add, if it be okay with him, to add the ASMSC Sturgeon Technical Committee to the list at the top after protected resources staff.
I have Erling and then Paul, and then we're going to go to anybody who hasn't spoken on the council on this issue.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not a voting member of this council, but I do support the motion from Dr. Pierce. Thank you.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think that if the goal of the motion is to refute the science, then that's one thing. If the goal of the motion is to work with the service, get some draft measures to work with our science center, our technical people, and everyone ahead of time, before the biological opinion, I think that's great. I think we need to work before that comes out so that we're not refuting the measures that are going to come out. So the motion in part reads, you're going to refute the science. We want to check everything. But if the goal of that motion is to work ahead of time to determine what best measures can be put in place to protect sturgeon, I think it's a great motion. So I just don't want the focus to be on us developing measures. That should be the focus.
Dr. Pierce, if I may ask you, is the intent of the motion to refute the science, or is the intent of the motion to build upon ways we can develop, as Paul said, I can't remember his exact words, but it's not, would you say one way or the other?
It's not my intent to create a conflict situation. It's not to refute the science. It's to strengthen our position as a council to move forward, hopefully in cooperation and in partnership with the service to deal with this important issue. So it's not to refute the science. And I'm also agreeable to Terry Stockwell's suggestion that we could put in the ASMSC Technical Committee at the top of the motion, so it would not just be the SSC, but the ASMSC Technical Committee, too.
Thank you. Does the seconder agree to that?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody who hasn't spoken on this? Mark Gibson, then Dave Gaethel, and Mary Beth.
Thank you. Paul Howard has said twice two different ways what I think is spot on. This motion contains, despite what Dr. Pierce just said, an element of review of the listing, the basis for the listing, and recommendations back to the council as to how to improve that. That's a waste of time. They're not going to change anything with that. The ESA is designed so that once a listing has occurred, parties can't get in there and mess around with it and delay it. So there are pieces of this motion that I can't support. I do think that Paul was right when he said there a group needs to get together to get out ahead of this, and I think Ron Smolowitz was spot on as well, suggesting that needs to be a higher-level group, including, council officials, executive committee, and so on, NOAA officials, ASMFC officials. So I don't support this motion the way it's written. I understand what we're trying to get to. Everybody's concerned about this, but there are too many elements in here, which is turning over rocks and looking for something that what wasn't included. And I don't think that's going to be allowable under the Act. Thank you.
Dave Gaethel.
Okay. I support the motion. We didn't ask for this fight. Personally, I think that it shouldn't have been listed. It is endangered. I think they should have just tossed the whole thing and done a stock assessment, and then ask the petitioners to come back. But that horse has left the barn. But we've been tossed into this now. You know, we're right square in the middle of it, whether we want to be here or not. I don't think we do. And as such, I think we should pull out every bit of information we can muster. And that's how I read this motion. It's to gather as much information as we can have so we can make informed decisions to deal with the issues that are being raised. Pretty much that simple.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the motion. It has a lot of parts and pieces to it that I'm not exactly sure on, but the general idea here is that the process that we're used to under the ESA is not transparent. It's not a public process, and we end up getting biops that just get dropped on the table, and they say, you know, by the way, here are the RPMs. If it's jeopardy, it's one thing. No jeopardy, they're minor. Yet our interpretation of the past has been, no, they're not minor at all. So anything we can do to make it a more open public process, I support. So I'll support the motion.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to support the motion. I agree with what Mark said. I would like to support it, but I haven't even had a chance to read it yet. And I object to voting on this without having some time to look it over. I don't know if we can make copies of it or and have a recess to look it over, but I haven't had a chance to digest this entire thing yet, and I'm not willing to vote for it until I have that.
Sally.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd suggest the same thing. I mean, I can't vote for something that I don't have a complete understanding of. You know, maybe people are comfortable with the discussion, but it's the motion that we're voting on here, and there are pieces of this that, I mean, I just can't even read from here, so much less people who are in the back of the room, I'm sure. You know, as I said at the beginning, the intent of this seems to be along the lines of the kind of information that we need to have, but we also need to let the service do their work so that we can have a chance to look at a draft biological opinion. We haven't even looked at that yet. So this is ahead of the game, and we, you know, there's been a clear message sent to the service. They've been here how many times now, and to the MID and ASMFC. They know this is something that is of significant concern to the council. But we want to be deploying our resources, the SSC, in the most effective way possible. And I can't tell if this is. I don't think that it is, and I would also ask that we have a chance to take a look at this before we have a vote.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The motion isn't very clear about who's going to be in the lead. It looks like, you know, we've had some great discussions about the need for everyone to come together, and I think there's no question we need to come together. We need to all be involved in the biological opinion, the drafting of the measures early rather than after the fact. So maybe we can delay this June, August biological opinion till later so we can get all the groups together. But I'm not clear that our SSC is in the lead, that our staff will get all the different groups together, Science Center, NIMS, ASMFC. I'm not clear on that. I'm clear there's a need for us all to get together that's going to be impacted. But, you know, I certainly look to the MID already has an FMAT, and, you know, there's just an awful lot of work that needs to be done here other than just the motion that says our SSC will do this or that.
Okay. Seeing that there is some concern about the inability to read the entire motion, we'll take a 10-minute break right now. I'm going to ask staff if they can get that printed out. I would ask people to get back to their seats, those that need to want to read it, because we're probably going to move ahead after that relatively quickly. We've still got another protected species issue. 10 minutes, please. I hope that the council members who were interested in getting a chance to read the motion have done so. I thank staff for getting it out to us so quickly. I also want to say from this day forward, we will have what is going to be known as the Pierce Rule. And that is, if the motion can't fit on the single screen, I will rule it out of order.
Just make two
Dave Preble.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I haven't had a chance to look at it in detail, but I've read it through and I made a few notes. As I said, I would like to pass a motion, this motion or one like it. And I think that Greg DiMartino made an excellent point. This is a major train wreck, and we need to take it very seriously. The questions I have, there are some problems in wording here that I was afraid I might find with this convoluted emotion. The first paragraph, the council sends a letter to NIMS requesting a joint meeting of the agencies, et cetera, is that needed at this time? And that's, I think, a question for Paul. I have a number of issues here, but that, I think, is a question for Paul. Is that something that that would benefit the process, that kind of meeting?
Well, I mean, my comment is that is the crux of this entire motion. I'm not sure that without it that we'll be able to move it ahead at this point in time.
Okay, then that's what I wanted to find out. In paragraph A, following this meeting, the SSC will review. The operative word there is review. That's the verb that controls the that paragraph, review. The following paragraph B, it says, after this review, the SSC will advise the council as to the appropriateness of the methodology used in the NMFS analysis and recommend ways to improve the analysis and how the analysis can be used to reduce stringent bycast. No place ahead of that does it refer to or explain what is meant by the term analysis, what that encompasses. And I don't understand it. I want to understand that. And then moving down in Section 2, Paragraph A, the expression so-called is not called for. That expression should go away. That's excessively prejudicial. And then down in Section C, draft biops on sturgeon following the precedent set with the Pacific Councils and with a potential ESA listing involved. I think it said involving North Pacific groundfish and Hawaiian swordfish fisheries. I don't understand why that is in there at all. And those are just going through it briefly. Those are the brief things that strike me as being, well, that I don't understand. At this point, I'd like to pass this motion. I'm wondering if I can't right now. I'd have to abstain on this. I'm wondering if, given the importance of this issue, if we shouldn't move this document directly to the executive committee to tighten it up or review it or figure out where we need to go with it. And I would even suggest, once this is done, a one-day, given the importance of the issue, a one-day full council meeting to make this determination what we do with this might be in order. But I'm uncomfortable with this right now, and I'd like to have something like this move, but I'm just not comfortable with this.
Anyone else from the council who has not spoken on this, or since they've read it, have comments? Sally.
Okay, so I've had a chance to read it through once, still have some questions about it. Seems to me under 1A, following this meeting, if we said that the SSC would review the draft biological opinion and white paper, that would put this request in the right context and time frame to be able to have the SSC responding to the work that's ongoing. 1B, I think that puts the the SSC in kind of an uncomfortable position in terms of determining the appropriateness of the methodology. And I think that 2C and D have clearly been articulated and should absolutely stay in this motion as it passes, and we've heard clearly that the agency intends to share the draft biological opinion with the council, and that there's a need for significant time to review it when it's complete. That said, I still cannot support the motion as written. There are still too many questions. Thank you.
Frank Blount.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think a lot of my concerns have been addressed by others, but in the very first where it says the staff and the New England Fisheries Management Council and the Mid-Atlantic SSCs, we're assuming that the Mid-Atlantic Council feels the same way here, and that's kind of jumping ahead. I mean, we'd have to send a letter to the Mid asking if they support this type of concept and not just saying that, you know, we have to ask them if they're on board and just not assume that they are. So I think that is, we have to look at that section, too.
I agree, Frank, that there are, you know, some questions there, but remember this is the letter that we would be sending to NIMS, and the service works with both the councils. So my assumption is that, you know, if they want to put this together, that they would make that request of the MID to be participatory in the process. I think you're right. It's not something for us to directly...
Correct, but the MID could say that we don't have any problem. We don't want to go on down this path. So let's just...
Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As evidenced by Kim's presence here today and at committee meetings, at her presentation next week, and at previous meetings of the commission and also at the council, and through our conversations with the state directors at the state directors meeting and subsequent conversations with the state directors, I want to state clearly we are committed to working with these bodies, with the commissions, or with the commission and the councils, to ensuring that we have a robust list of reasonable and prudent measures and alternatives. That's really, to my mind, the critical role that the council or an advisory panel can play. We need input from these bodies to ensure that that list that is ultimately presented in a biological opinion has effective measures in it that are informed by the input of industry through the APs. I appreciate Paul's question earlier about whether this is calling for refutation of the science. And Dr. Pierce's response that it isn't, we just need a more full understanding of the science so that we can get to the measures. I hear you. The Mid-Atlantic Council has taken a different approach, and though there still remain some questions about the listing or about our methodologies, they have opted to develop this advisory panel towards responding to the draft list of measures or alternatives. I can't emphasize enough that that's really what we need, and we're eager to get that information so that the actionable items that come out of this are informed by the council's input. The measures that Kim presented in the presentation have been shared with all of these bodies, and have yet to get any concrete responses back saying there's more that we can do in this area or that area in terms of gear, soak times, practices, you know, resuscitation, outreach, whatever. And we would really like that input from the industry. And so my sense is that rather than through the SSC, the place to have this conversation is through another panel that would provide more of an industry focus on the measures. In terms of the draft biological opinion, we have the status of the species is already out there in another format through the ESA listing. We can provide a description of the fisheries. The draft reasonable and prudent measures or alternatives were in the presentation here. Really, that leaves the jeopardy analysis methodology, which Kim said could be ready in a few weeks and available. That, but for the trappings of a formal document, is the draft biological opinion. Okay, so you've already got some pieces of it, and we can cobble them together in a single document, so it's a little more usable for you. But that's it. And so we can respond and call it a draft biological opinion. But we will make an effort to get all of those pieces to you as soon as possible. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Jim.
I'd like to ask a question of the service. The panel, so to speak, that you were referring to there, made up of, I'm assuming, some council people, some industry people. Can your office supply people and help support that type of panel and that type of work?
Mr. Chairman, yes, we can. Yes.
Anybody who has not spoken? Mark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, in general, support the intent of this motion, mostly because it tends to make the process a little more transparent and helps us be a little more proactive in how we address the issue. But my biggest problem lies with the sentence under Section 1A, Roman numeral 1, where it's kind of aiming at the methodology and the conclusions of the listing, and thereby, looks like it's, trying to refute the conclusions of the listing. The remainder of that, Roman numeral 2 and then B, I think I support because I think if we refine the bycatch and discard estimates, that will help us down the road when we try to come up with measures that will help us, reduce interactions and mortalities. And then the rest of that motion, I pretty much agree with as well. So my big hang-up is 1A, Roman numeral 1.
Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to call a question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate.
Thirteen
in favor. Opposed? Three opposed. Abstention? One. 13-3-1, the motion carries. Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think that, this was about a letter, but I think key is that we get the draft biological opinion in one fell swoop, and then how are we going to address it? I think yesterday we talked about, a delay in the monkfish catch shares program so that we could use a staff member to start dealing with sturgeon. Now we're continuing. So based on the need to get out and work with the biological opinion early rather than work after we get it, I'm wondering if the council wants to reconsider how we're going to set up. Do we need a committee like the MID? Do we need an advisory panel? Do we need a staff member? Or do we just wait until we get the biological opinion?
Jim?
Yeah, kind of along that lines and to what Dan said, I'd like to make a motion that the council charge the executive committee to work with the service in structuring a panel that would include industry and the service and some representatives from the council to work on this draft biological opinion and how we're going to respond to it moving forward.
Who seconded that? Sally. Discussion. Sally and then Mary Beth. Mary Beth.
I support this motion. I'm just curious if we want to set some kind of timeline on this. I mean, how much time do we have? When would you like to see this accomplished? I mean, I guess the question is, where would you like to be on this when we come back in June?
I think the intent would be that we would work on this at the next executive committee meeting and report it back to the council in June. Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a motion ready to put up as well, and my idea was to actually formulate an ad hoc Sturgeon ESA committee with an AP attached. We don't have to populate it immediately, but we need to identify the people who would be appropriate so that we can move quickly. So it would need to be done sooner rather than later.
Anyone else on the council? I go to the audience. Anybody want to comment on this? Ron?
Ron Smolowitz. I support this motion. I think it's very important. But I think I'd like to know what's going on as far as getting a stock assessment, or not so much stock assessment, improved survey data. Is there a major tagging program going on? I mean, there needs to be a full-scale, full-court press to get survey data so that the stock assessment has to be built on good survey data. It seems to me there should be a massive effort by the science authorities, especially Northeast Science Center, to be tagging sturgeon. I mean, that's how we get out of these problems, by getting accurate stock assessments. That's what we did with the loggerhead turtle. That's what we did with a number of the other species. What's going on? I mean, that's what the council should be forcing here.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Doug Grout.
ASMSC has been doing a fair amount of work since we put a moratorium on sturgeon. So I think there is a fair amount of information out there, and maybe we can try and bring that to the council for their information so they can be aware of what data has been collected since we first put a moratorium on them.
Rodney.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought maybe we should include somebody from the mid on this panel. I don't see it there. I see NIMS and us. Would it be appropriate to include a member from the mid on it?
I think that when the executive committee looks at that, we'll make that determination, and most likely you're correct. I think that, and originally our intent was to form some sort of a joint committee, but our operating rules make it sometimes hard to do that. Anyone else who hasn't spoken on this? Because I want to move this along. We still have one more protected species to go through today, this morning, before we get to other issues. Paul.
Just one last thing, Mr. Chairman. The NRCC meets May 21 and 22, I think, and we discuss stock assessments then. And Vince is there to discuss sturgeon stock assessment, so we can, try to move that as quickly as possible at the NRCC meeting.
I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion so indicate.
Sixteen.
16 in favor, opposed, abstention, 16-01. The motion carries. Sally.
Just a question, Mr. Chairman. Could we, at the end of the meeting, perhaps tomorrow, just have a general update from staff on how the things that we're adding to the SSC's to-do list is changing their workload? And I think that would be helpful to understand, you know, what we're doing to the SSC.
I'm going to say maybe. And the only reason is that it may be something that we have to look at the executive committee level and bring back to the council for the next meeting. We're giving staff some time to figure out how the things we have added at this point in time and what that's going to do with, you know, staff requirements and PDT requirements feeding into the SSC.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, even if we could just have a clarification of the things that we've added over the course of 3 days, I think that would be helpful, just to so we have an understanding of what additional demands there are, even before it's sorted out in the specifics.
Tom.
This is to another point, in case you wanted to respond to Sally's last comment, but my understanding and from Dan's earlier comments is that what the service was actually looking for out of this discussion and some of the discussions at the committees was to focus on their slide 39, which is possible measures to consider. And we haven't done that. I don't think we spent that much time on it at the committee levels either, at least in the committees that I participated in. Is it our intention then to work through this newly formed panel to address that, because I do think that we need to provide some pretty substantial and comprehensive input in terms of, you know, I think they've laid out a wide range of possible measures, but some of them are a lot more appealing than others, and I certainly think we'd want to take some time to weigh in through our APs, through the committees and council, and maybe through this panel as well. But if I don't want to move on without having some next steps for how we're going to prioritize and support or oppose specific measures that they're proposing.
Well, I guess I was under the impression that those were some of the issues that the newly formed panel would tackle, rather than us tackling them here today. I would like to move on to Harbor Porpoise.